Okay, I don't know exactly know why I'm recording this, because if I upload it, I'll never be able to be the chief rabbi of Tzahal. So, right. Are you all familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yes.
Wait.
No?
No.
Sarat, this is yesterday morning. I turned on the radio. It's all in Hebrew, a little bit in English, but all in Hebrew. Sarat harab tzar. Rab tzar, a rab rashi tzar. Okay? Rab tzva'i rashi. Ha'im hichshir ones ve'et milchama. Did he permit rape at the time of war? Okay? He wrote an article. This person, his name is Rabbi Ayal Krim. He's 59. He's very well respected. He served as a tzanchan, and he was a ktzin tzanchanim before he joined the chief rabbinate. He's like a very interesting model of rabbinic leadership, and everybody loves him. Everybody's in favor of him. Everybody thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Except he once wrote an article in Kippa, maybe Kippa on a website about the idea of Eshet Yafat Toar. Okay? And in the idea of Eshet Yafat Toar, did you put your bowl away? Okay. The idea of Eshet Yafat Toar, just to briefly describe it, it's in Ki Teitzei La Milchama, Parsha Ki Teitzei. The Torah describes the process of what can a Jewish soldier do and what can't a Jewish soldier do with a woman who is a shivuya. And it's a whole long discussion, and et cetera, et cetera. And so Rav Ayal Krim came out and wrote about these things he didn't write it. He wasn't clear enough that he was writing in a theoretical way, but rather he was writing in a sort of a halachic discussion. In the context of a halachic discourse, he was writing the idea of what the Torah does permit and doesn't permit to a soldier. And anybody who knows anything about learning knows that he was talking about then. He was talking about the theoretical sugya. But of course, anything you can take out of context. You can anything that anybody writes in a halachic setting, you just quote the relevant paragraph, and it says, "Did he permit a soldier to rape a woman in time of war?" Everybody understand?
That's what happened.
Yes.
Oh gosh. And
like
I said, a
pretty woman. What? Ishin yifat Torah, right? That's what happened. So ironically, like the news, like loves this. You know what I'm saying? It follows wonderful stereotypes see the Orthodox are crazy. You know what I'm saying? And even the most moderate of rabbis who serve in the army are also crazy. So therefore, and that's why, you'll never find any rabbi that, if you write anything or say anything about halakha, then you're in big trouble. The only problem is, he wrote it. So, he did write it. So does it make you feel better to say, well, he was talking about the theoretical halakha. Makes you feel better, but lema'aseh, of course, he would agree that that's not something that we would condone today. Yeah, I'm glad Laura's here because I knew.
But then,
yeah. Well,
that's the question is, like, there are a lot of things in the Torah that don't apply today, so maybe this is one of them.
Ishifat Torah. Yeah, it doesn't apply today.
So then,
why did it apply then?
Well, okay. First of all, so the argument would be, and I think it's an interesting argument and one that we're going to discuss today, which is why I'm bringing this up, okay? The argument is morality, or the social norms, societal norms and morality have shifted dramatically. You know, the idea that there are rules of war, right, is a very, very relatively modern convention. That's not the Geneva Conventions were in the 19-whatevers, after World War I, when everybody was just bombing each other with chemical weapons all the time. The idea that when I try to kill you, I should do it in a civilized way. And it just reminds me, somebody got me on this series called Turn. Anybody see it? Turn?
No.
Ah, it's about this spy series about the American Revolutionary War. Very interesting. Okay? So the British, these guys are like, we'll fight in a civilized manner. You know, that was a big thing of theirs, that when you fought, the officers were in the back, and they were like, there are rules. We're not animals. If we're going to kill each other, we're going to do it in a civilized manner. Okay?
Yeah.
So British. I don't know.
They're just shooting at each
what?
Other.
What?
One shoots first, and the next one.
They're like rules of engagement.
Right. There are rules of engagement.
Like a soccer match.
Like a soccer. Right. So one of the reasons Americans won is because they didn't really want to play by those rules. But okay. Well, what do you think that we're dealing with with our enemies today? We play by certain rules. We have certain expectations,
right.
And they don't have those rules.
Right.
So there are no rules.
Right.
Interesting. Anyway, so in those times, the idea of raping and pillaging in war was just Of course it was accepted. You know what I'm saying? So came along the Torah and said, whoa, if you're going to do this, if you're going to take a woman in time of war, it has to be within certain parameters. Some opinions were that Eshet Yifat Tor wasn't a woman you slept with, it was a woman that you captured, and now you want to marry her. And now, you know what I'm saying? Whatever, that might make you feel better, but there are opinions that say otherwise. There are opinions that say otherwise. Nonetheless, like many of the rules of the Torah, I would suggest, for example, the rules about slavery, Eved Kenani. The rules about slavery pushed the ball really very much forward in terms of what was permitted and what was not, and how we relate to slaves in general, as opposed to just simple property. It didn't ban slavery outright. Could it have? I guess the Torah could have, but, you know, the Torah did not. But it definitely made categories and rules. So that is the topic that we're going to discuss today in the context of the last story in Parshat Balak, which is the story of Pinchas. Okay? So I will... Mina's coming. I will say by way of... That's by way of introduction. It was surrounding this whole brouhaha. And that's just the way it is. Like, people are not interested. Nobody on Facebook reads the actual article, right? What do you read? Just read the headline, right? Orthodox rabbi condones rape. That's basically what it says.
Was it clarified? In the end, was it clarified?
What does that mean, was it clarified?
That he didn't condone rape.
Doesn't matter.
The press is not interested.
You have to understand about the press today. It's all about the clicks. It's all about the clicks. Their revenue, it's revenue and clicks. Revenue and clicks. So that's all it is. It doesn't, like, the in-depth, nobody, even the news today is all headlines. Even the news today is, right, nobody does, not on either side.
Yeah, I know, but...
Which is a problem. I'm going to discuss it. What?
No, I was at a place and they were giving out that Yediot Ahronot, and I was on the press.
Oh, you saw it?
Yeah, and this woman was, they're rough, and it's like,
see?
But I think it's like a kilo lashem. So if it gets clarified that it's a theoretical thing and that it doesn't apply to...
Yes, it was clarified. Even the more moderate positions even like the government people, the left-wing people, like what they don't realize, they realize that this rabbi is a very moderate person.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He's very reasonable. So, like, really, do we want to, like, reject him? Who are you going to get instead?
Right.
And I have no idea who the candidates are. He hasn't been approved yet by the Minister of Defense. So could this have torpedoed his position?
Someone talks about slavery means he's...
So I'm actually not right. So I have now just disqualified myself to be the chief rabbi of the army. Okay? You know, what can you do? It's going
to
get worse. It's going
to
get worse, right? if called upon. Okay. So, and then yesterday, Nikki saw this. I attended a conference. Okay, it was a conference put together by a couple of rabbinic groups, a number of organizations. It was Leman Tzion v'Yerushalayim, and it was a Kenes Hitmodedut im HaReforma v'Yisrael. Conference to hitmodedut. How would you translate the hitmodei? To grapple, to cope with reform in Israel. Okay? Who spoke? Tell me if you know these names. Rav Shmuel Eliyahu, Rav Shlomo Aviner, right? Rav David Lau, Rav Herschel Schechter, Rav Micha Goodman, he's a rabbi of Petach Tikva. Micha Levi.
Yeah, we have our own.
Yeah.
It wasn't him.
Okay. These are
big names.
I'm sorry, Rabbi Yaakov Ariel. These are
the names,
not some of
the names.
Big names. And I got there, I thought there'd be like, you know, 30 people there and whatever. Hundreds of people, packed, really wall to wall, standing room only. Rav Tao came and was in the crowd. Rav Tao from America, from Haramore. He was sitting there, everybody like stood up and like he just like sat in the back. You know what I'm saying? It was fascinating. All these people, very important people, people I knew from like a lot of different places came to support this idea of fighting against reform. And I went there. I don't know. I'll talk about it at the end. I went there with one question, but I went there because how shall I say this in a nice way? Obviously, I do not feel that Reform Judaism is a legitimate representation of God's will in the world. Okay, let's just put that out there. Okay. Nonetheless, is a war against Reform in Israel, is the ongoing campaign against Reform in Israel, is it going to accomplish anything? And is it worth having this battle? This is the question. I.e., Does reform, A, present a real threat? Does it really present a threat in Israel? And that's a political question. And B, there's another question. When you go to battle, when you, you know, go to war against somebody, then there are casualties. So you could win, but the question is, what are you gonna, what is the collateral damage that you're gonna cause at the same time?
Should we fight the movement and not the people?
What?
Should we fight the movement and not the people, and that's the trick.
How do you do
and
that?
You can't, meaning, you negate the movement and what it stands for,
mm-hmm.
but the people behind it are Jews, and you want to keep them, you don't want to alienate.
I don't know if you saw this. So there is a militant wing of reform in Israel that is, you know what I'm saying, with the, they have this. They're very, very proactive and...
They're not militant.
Okay.
There
is
a...
They have arms. But they're a small group.
Very small group. So then they had a prayer service at the Kotel. I don't know if you saw this. At that prayer service, there wasn't just a protest. There happened to be a guy there. I don't know who he is.
Oh, I did see that.
You saw this. Okay, so you want to tell everybody what he did?
Tearing up his
he took their prayer book
down.
On the other side of the mechitza,
yeah.
and he ripped it into pieces. Okay?
Yeah.
Right, he took the reform prayer book, okay, and he ripped it into pieces. He was going to show them that this is, that was captured by, of course, a cell phone. Mm-hmm. And then it was shared by
everyone
on social media so that this was seen by Jews around the world, Jews and non-Jews around the world, if not tens, hundreds of thousands of times. I kid you not. Okay? So, how does a Reform Jew in Duluth, Minnesota feel when he sees this video of this Orthodox person tearing up a prayer book at the Kotel?
And everyone's
supposed to be part of him. Oh. Okay? So, is that, that's the war. So, is that war worth having? Or is the collateral damage too great? That's the question.
According to the people who wage the war, the amount of actual Jews among the reforms is so minimal that the casualties are not necessarily Jewish casualties.
Rabbi Abinader did mention that. He did mention that. But it's a question.
If you wouldn't fight them so hard at the hotel, they would just go away. I don't know. I think they want the
They wouldn't go away. They would have their prayer service once a month.
Yeah, but I think that now there are a lot of dafka there.
Sure.
So if the press, if it means, if the Orthodox wouldn't make such a big deal of it, then the press wouldn't make such a big deal of it, and it wouldn't get that much attention.
So that's a tactical question. That's a tactical question. I say all of this because perception, how we're perceived, it's an important discussion. I'm struggling with this. I'm really struggling with this. I'm struggling with it more today than yesterday, and I'll explain to you why. We're going to look at some parsha, the end of Balak, Perek Kaf Hei. The end of Parshat Balak. So most of Parshat Balak is Balak, the king of Moab, is intimidated by the Jewish people and he wants to curse the Jewish people. He goes to Bilam. Bilam is the prophet. He says, help me curse them. And Bilam eventually shows up. This is a great story with the donkey that we've done, but we should do again. Okay? And then he tries to curse him three times and it doesn't work out and whatever. What? I don't know why you love it so much.
I really love it. First of all,
the talking donkey?
The talking donkey. I love the talking donkey. The talking donkey is awesome.
So, right. And then he keeps trying, but it doesn't work. And the fact that you have this whole parsha about a non-Jewish, like a parallel event that's happening to what's going on in the Jewish people at that time, you never have a window into that. You never see that.
Right.
It's always told from a very specific, narrow perspective of the Jewish people. And you never see what's going on around them, and it's just fascinating, and it's such an anomaly. It's so different.
This is true.
I agree. I love this.
That's
what?
I agree. I love this parsha.
Okay, I like it too. I don't know. It's my bar mitzvah parsha, but I butchered it. Perek Kaf Hei,
Vayeshev
Pasuk Aleph. Okay, so Bilam fails, and he goes home. Perek Kaf Hei. This is the last story. Very short story. Vayeshev Yisrael Bashitim. The Jewish people are dwelling in Shittim. Vayachal ha'am liznot el benot Moab. And the nation begins liznot to be engaged in sexual immorality with the daughters of Moab. Vatikrena la'am bezivchei Elohehem. So the girls weren't, they were missionaries. But as opposed to the Mormons who just go around knocking on doors, these girls plied their wares in a blatant attempt to try to convince the Jewish people to worship idolatry, i.e., very often pagan ritual is engaged very much in the physical. Okay, so by enticing the Jewish men with these with their physical desires, they're able to quite easily merge the physical with the pagan ritual. And interestingly enough, these are people that have not grown up in pagan ritual at all. They're not exposed to it whatsoever.
The Jews. No.
Like imagine Lahavdil, you know, taking some kid who grew up in New Square and now he's 40, and then you take him out and you bring him to Times Square. He's never seen anything in his life, and all of a sudden you put him in the middle of Times Square. You know, how long would he last? You hope a long time, but really, you know, not so good. Okay, Vayochal Ha'am, they ate. Vayishtachavu le'Elohim, and they bowed down to their gods. Vayitzamed Yisrael le'Baal Peor, Vayicharaf Hashem Yisrael, and the Jewish people, Vayitzamed, Tzamud, they became clung to, they attached themselves to Baal Peor. God became angered with Israel. Remember, this is very different. This is very different. Where are the Jewish people? What are they doing? Where are they situated?
They're about to go.
They're on in Arvot Moab. Asher, the last parsha is, they're in Arvot Moab. Asher al Yarden Yirechov. They're literally there. They're camped in the final camp. Right, they're on the doorstep. And it's like, really? Now this? You know what I'm saying? Like the one thing they need is spiritual purity in order to merit the hand of God, in order to merit God's divine providence, that they'll be able to conquer the nation. And then they come up with this. Okay? It's really our first interaction with outside society. And in our first interaction with outside pagan society, total failure, right? Very bad.
V'yama Hashem Moshe, kach et kor brashei ha'am, v'hoka otam la'Hashem neged ha'shemesh, v'yashov charon af Hashem Yisrael. Very harsh response. That says to Moshe, take the heads of the nation. Who are the heads of the nation? Which ones? Obviously, only those that are engaging in this behavior. Hoka otam lahashem neged hashamesh.
Hang
them. Execute them. Okay, before God. Neged hashamesh. Everyone will see this. Okay. V'yashov charon af Hashem Yisrael. Make examples of the leadership, and then everybody will stop. And my wrath will
be. That's not what the pasuk said. And my wrath will be appeased.
Meaning what?
Right, because but that missing step in the middle is
that they'll stop.
Right, that they'll stop.
Right.
Withdraw.
It doesn't say it there.
So you're trying to get
right.
Mm-hmm.
If the implication is that God needs an offering to be appeased, like the indication is that the whole story sounds very pagan.
Yeah.
Like they're not listening to God. God needs a gift so that he won't be angry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole structure of the story seems pagan.
Rashi.
Kach et kor rashei ha'am, lishpot et ha'avdim lepa'or.
Don't kill the leaders. Take the heads, and they'll serve as judges. Vehoka otam, and hang who is them et ha'avdim. You like that?
Yeah, but Rashi has to say that because otherwise it doesn't fit God's MO.
Right.
But why rashei? Oh, the heads, literally the head.
Right, Rashi has to say this. You're saying it's not
Pshat.
It's Drash.
It's what he needs to say in order to make the
Pshat.
No, it fits in with the Pshat, but the Pshat is it just.
Why is it problematic? I'll read you a Midrash Tanchuma. I was going to talk about that.
No,
you don't know
Amar. This is why the Midrashim, and it's in a Mikra, it's Omer Ela Dorsheni.
No, that's not true. Rabbi Yudan Omer, et Rashi ha'am tala, al shalom machu b'mnei Yisrael mesuyamim.
The Seder, but still. No.
Yes.
You're
a leader.
Can you stop?
You take responsibility.
Wait.
That's
yes,
what the Midrash says.
Exactly. But that's
what
not what I'm saying. That's not what the pasuk says. The Midrash says that there's an act and a consequence to the act. The story said God is mad and needs to be appeased by a gift.
V'yashov no.
Yeah.
V'yashov charon af
Hashem Yisrael. There's no indication in the text.
And his wrath will be appeased.
There's no indication in the text that his wrath will be appeased because tshuva is happening, because punishments are happening.
No, because punishments are happening,
yeah,
of course.
Because
punishment
will
be appeased. But
it's,
do you follow
what I'm saying? No, but there is the word Yisrael at the end, so that kind of suggests that for Israel's sake, like.
But still, it still seems very, like, very pagan.
I don't know if I agree with you. I think you're reading too much into it.
I think you are reading too much into it.
No.
But you have to read too much into it because otherwise it doesn't fit the way God functions.
Vayomer Moshe. I think the Midrash says, yeah, it is kind of warm.
It's warm.
The Midrash says both sides. The Midrash says either literally kill the leaders, or the leaders will kill the...
The Ovdim.
Right,
they're both
Ovdim.
Saying the same thing.
Vayomer Moshe el Shoftei Yisrael, hirgu ish anashav venizmedim lebaal po'or. So if, according to Rashi's opinion, Moshe did what he was told.
Right.
According to the other opinion, Moshe didn't do what he was told.
Mm-hmm.
Moshe ignored the commandment of God.
Right.
Which would make Rashi a little bit more logical. If Moshe was told specifically, kill the leaders, then otherwise you'd have to say, whatever. Okay, vihine. Ish bibnei Yisrael ba. Vayakrev el echav et hamidyanit le'enei Moshe u'le'enei kol adat
v'nei Yisrael. In the middle of him doing all of this punishing thing.
He's trying. No, he told him to.
Right.
The fact that Moshe's told him to doesn't mean that they're able to, that they did.
But that was the goal. That was supposed to be that. Right. Then he comes in, it's like, boom.
We don't know how long this took, but one gets the sense that there's just a balagan. There's no control. Like, all sense of order is gone. Right? Everything has sort of fallen apart. The people have begun to sin. Leadership isn't functioning as leadership. So Moshe is trying to galvanize them, and it's just not happening the way it's supposed to happen. So this Ish, as we know, who's this Ish, by the way? We know who it is.
From the Nasi of Shimon.
Right, the Nasi of Shimon.
Right.
Okay, Zimri ben Salu. Okay, so how's your leadership going if the governor of the Shevet is the one that's you know, dragging Midianite women right in front of you to show you who's in charge? Okay, le'enei Moshe u'le'enei kol adat b'nei Yisrael, to the eyes of Moshe and all kol adat b'nei Yisrael, v'hema bochim petach oel moed. They are crying at the opening of Ohel Moed. What in the world happened? Like, the first question you have to ask yourself is, what happened? Well, okay, we know sin we get. We understand sin. We understand people that are... Love you. We understand people that are drawn to sinfulness. Right? I get all the guys that were enticed by the women, and I even get that they were... You know what I'm saying? When did the crossover happen between... when did it become go from sleeping with the women, you know, to idolatry, to public idolatry, to direct insolence and challenging of Moshe's leadership? Okay, you said it.
What?
Midron chalaklak is a slippery slope. Yesterday, you like how that sounds? You drunk chalaklak.
Yeah,
like you just is very.
So yesterday, one of the speakers was the head of the Mechina Kedam Tzvait in Bnei David, I think it's called.
Eli. Rav Sadan.
Could have been Rav Sadan. I don't want to say specifically. I have the packet. I remember. Okay. So he gave a whole talk about. It wasn't really about reform, but it was about the influence of secularism in the army. So he says that the army has. They took away, you should know, they took away the notion of Toda'a Yehudit from the Rabbanut HaTzva'it, from the chief rabbinate,
they
and gave it to the Agap HaChinuch.
Right.
This is a huge deal, bigger than people realize. It happened very quietly, but there's this sort of pushback. Remember, for every action, there's a reaction. For every action, there's a reaction. So there's been this great pushback among the army elites, or the left wing, or the secular, whatever you want to say, to take away this idea of Jewish identity. So he said that one of the criteria that the Agap HaChinuch, that the education division, teaches in their talks is this idea of the Madron Chalaklak, the slippery slope. What's slippery slope? He says when they take Ktsinim, very, very high officers, they take them on a trip to Poland, and they bring these Polish citizens, and they say, these Germans, and they talk about how could it be that a normal German person could all of a sudden suddenly become this monster. And so they talk about the idea that power sort of transforms you into this, it could be, it has the power, the ability to transform you into something that you never intended to be.
The wave.
What?
The wave.
Right. But the message obviously is to the soldiers of Tzahal not to oppress the weak and not to be able to be fearful. So and like when because you could turn into that too. So if you think about it, remember then right before the Nafali Asimon, remember right before Yom HaTzma'ut, this big general talked about the idea that there are signs of Nazi Germany and Israeli society?
Yeah.
That's from that. That's because they're talking exactly about that in the army. This is a core value of the army. And it says, so this Rav from B'nai Tam, that's he says, it's called the Madrona Chalaklak, like the slippery slope.
And that's why they're putting Elor,
right,
Barya
the ring
on, this, on the stand. That's why they're, what they're doing
this
to,
is a
what
core
they're doing
army
to him,
value,
because
right,
he can't,
Madrona.
You know, he has fallen down the Madrona Chalaklak.
So this is, by the way, a battle of values that's going on in Israel, about what values, and he's like, what about, we're right, what about, we this land belongs to us. You know what I'm saying? There's really, it's a question of, you know, a battle for the values of the state and who controls and who's in charge, blah, blah, blah. You got me on the middle of blah, blah, blah. So what happened? Let's go back to our story. What in the world happened? Does anybody have any plausible suggestion? How long did it take to go from visiting the prostitutes in the mall in Arvot Moab to Zimri bringing a woman into the Sanhedrin right in front of the Mishkan? How long did it take? I don't know, but like total breakdown.
Moshe wasn't chastised for this at all.
Well, Moshe's dying anyway.
Yeah,
he's already
doesn't matter, not involved. But he's the, like the buck stops there.
It's true. It didn't happen overnight.
Right. And if the Nisi'im are to blame, then he is as well.
Let's say
Sorry
that that's true.
That
why do Hema Bochim Petach Omoi? They're crying. Why are they crying?
Because maybe they feel helpless. Like maybe.
Who's crying?
Moshe, Hema, Leinei, it says Leinei Moshe uLeinei Kol Adat Bnei Yisrael. VeHema Bochim Petach Ohel Moed. Why are they crying? It seems like he's powerless to do anything. Look at Rashi, very famous Rashi. Yeah.
I have a question.
But it doesn't happen in 1 second. But just societal order had totally broken down, completely and totally. Yeah.
Why does it say that it's Znut? Being with Benot Moab, because Rashi, when he talks about Rut, he says Moabit.
Rut converted.
What?
Rut converted.
Because she first converted?
Sure.
Yeah.
They didn't.
Right, but technically,
Rut converted.
A man is allowed to be with single woman.
No, there's a question whether it's Isur D'Oraita or Isur D'Rabbanan. No, it's not.
It's not
one. No, sorry. Jews can't sleep with single women. I can be in the army. I can be.
Right.
Can be the
Rav Tzvi.
Right. Okay. Anybody want to suggest what happened?
Yes.
Like, it's such an interesting. I mean, it was like, it's a sociological question. Like, what? Like, step A leads to step B leads to step C, and then you have the breakdown of society. Like, all of the leadership is like gone, and then people are so brazen.
I would say if you like look at, it's also kind of controversial, like the gay parade, right? Okay, so it's not just a gay parade. I mean, there's a lot of like things going on there, like in the middle of the street. If you ever see like footage of it, it's very disturbing. It's like a lot of public displays of affection.
Okay,
for the
you
street.
Can't go be the rats way either. No,
yeah. I'm okay with that. And people in Tel Aviv are clapping, and it's all okay. It's like it's culture that it's acceptable to do it in. Whereas let's say in Yerushalayim, if you bring the gay parade, there's always like a big, because in Yerushalayim it's not an acceptable culture. Meaning,
really? Some would suggest that the very idea of bringing the gay parade to Yerushalayim is a provocation.
Right.
It's an intentional provocation.
That's
I
agree.
I totally agree.
No, but she's saying the Ophi is different. What?
Well, Ophi is different, and that's why it's a provocation. Meaning, in Tel Aviv, it's acceptable. So there was obviously an acceptable atmosphere here. It's okay.
But then why are they crying?
Moshe's crying.
Because he can't.
Moshe and the leadership.
Multiple people are crying.
Who's crying? I have no idea.
It seems like Moshe and all the Jews.
It's so hard, right? It seems like Moshe and all the Jews.
How did it let it get so far?
No, that's the Madrona Chalaklak.
Right.
I know, but at some point it's
so disturbing.
Well, you can't. Like,
that's the trick. By the time that you do wake up, it's too late.
And then you need the Kanai.
Rashi, why is he crying? The pshat, why is he crying? What's the pshat, why he's crying?
Why are they crying?
What's the pshat?
Who is the they? Is it everyone?
Hard to know. Impossible to know. It's written in an obscure fashion. Pshat, no, first pshat, for Rashi. Why are they crying?
That we've gotten to this situation.
Right, they're powerless to do anything.
They're crying
because of this breakdown, because they can't do anything. Right. Look at Rashi. Hema bochim. Nitalma mimenu halacha. He's crying not because he can't act, because he's empowerless to act, but because he doesn't know what to do. Okay, kola the halacha is kol haboel aramit kanaim pogam. So they all turn to Moshe. Moshe, what should we do? Moshe, what should we do? And he's like,
I don't know.
Now, ask a different question. What's a different question?
Why didn't he know?
What?
Why?
Nit'alma mimenu. Translate. Nit'alma mimenu.
It was disappeared from
it
him.
It was hidden from him. Nit'alma mimenu.
He knew it and someone made him forget it.
Who made him forget it? God made him forget it. It was hidden from him. Why?
So what, his connection with God disappeared at that moment?
Well, it could be. First of all, Moshe's connection with God is directly dependent upon the people in which he finds himself.
Right.
Right? His Ruach HaKodesh, is definitely influenced by the environment. And all of a sudden, if all society breaks down, you got gay parades going in, like in front of the Mishkan, gone. You know what I'm saying? That's one possibility. Another possibility is, why did God hide the halakha from him? Somebody else has got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Moshe Rabbeinu, this is it. He's about to die.
Right.
One could suggest that Moshe Rabbeinu was crying because he's like, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
Wow. Right.
This is not the nation I took out of me.
No, forget this is not the nation.
I'm done.
I'm dead. We know this. I'm done. Zaradin was here.
He's tired.
I don't think he was tired. It said, Lo Nas Lecho.
No, he wasn't.
It was
tired.
Not tired. It was not tired. But he couldn't.
But he was tired of
couldn't
it.
Couldn't you say that this, like the timing was very, I guess, fortuitous, like from the, in that there was a change of leadership going on, and so there definitely was. There wasn't proper leadership around, maybe, and therefore this was allowed to happen.
You're saying that because everyone knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die, but Yehoshua was not yet appointed as the successor. Right.
There was like a vacuum of leadership.
So fascinating. It's so fascinating. What?
Is it also a form of
his crying, his tears?
Crying.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
When there's just no more words, and all you've got left is your tears.
Let's finish in Rashi. Wait a second. Go kulam bebichia. All of them began to cry. At the egel, Moshe stood up against, he stood up against all of them, 600,000 people. When the egel happened, Moshe Rabbeinu was like, this isn't going to happen, not on my watch. V'kan rafu yadav. And here his hands are weakened. He's like, no. Ela kadesh yavod Pinchas v'yitol et shera'ilah. So Rashi says explicitly, right, the reason was Moshe Rabbeinu was sort of pulled back.
So
some
Pinchas,
what?
So Pinchas could act.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't so Pinchas could act. It was so somebody could act. Somebody should act. Somebody's got to do something. You know what I'm saying? And it happened to be Pinchas. What if it wasn't Pinchas? Or?
It had to be Pinchas.
What if it wasn't Pinchas?
It had to be Pinchas.
Had to be Pinchas. What if it wasn't Pinchas?
Who knows?
Right. Doesn't speak well. What did Pinchas do? We know the story. Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Vayaka mitoch haida. Vayikach romach biyadav. He took a spear. Vayavo achar ish Yisrael el hakuba. He took... Okay, help me with the English. It's very hard to translate. And he came achar ish Yisrael, behind a man from Israel, el hakuba. To the... Chapter, verse 8.
He followed
the Israelite man
into the tent.
Kuba. Vayidkor et shnehem. He stabbed them. He pierced them. Et ish Yisrael ve'et aisha el kabata. See the play on words? Kuba and kabata.
Yeah.
Stabbed them both in the stomach. Didn't he stand and stab them in the stomach? According to the Midrash, he stabbed them in the genitals. Vate'atza ha-magefa me'al b'nei Yisrael. And the magefa stopped. Vayu ha-metim b'magefa. Oh, by the way, there's a magefa. You didn't know?
Yes.
Right, we didn't mention that. What?
The magefa wasn't mentioned.
No, it wasn't. And the magefa stopped.
Maybe the plague
maybe
is
the magefa metaphorical.
No, vayu ametim b'magefa arba'a ve'esrim.
There was
a magefa. 24,000 people
maybe
died.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a lot.
How long did this whole episode take?
No,
who knows? Impossible to know.
Wow.
Impossible.
They say that from Hitler Egel, and paganism was never removed from the
this
Jewish
is 40
people.
Years later. They're all dead.
That's
all the parents
so
are dead. What, you think they taught paganism to their kids?
I'm saying it was never properly extricated.
In the times of Yeshua, yes, because they let the Plishtim live. The Plishtim were the ones that were totally immersed in paganism. They didn't uproot the society.
But I'm saying that there was still a Garim there in the
Jewish people.
And now there's
there always was a
vulnerable.
We're always vulnerable.
Okay, but a plague explains kind of the vulnerability at that point.
What do you mean?
You were saying, the slippery slope, how is it that they could become the way they became?
Okay.
I think the plague is a punishment, though.
The plague is definitely a punishment.
Because the plague came first, though.
What do you mean?
Was there a plague first that left them vulnerable?
No. The implication.
Remember, because everything is spiritual.
The implication of
thing as having a plague that's simply spread by by physical bacteria.
It's a manifestation
of divine.
The implication is it's a spiritual plague.
Oh,
that they died because that's clearly the implication. And then how does it make sense? Because then when Pinchas kills Zimri and Cosby,
it stops.
Yeah. Okay. This halacha, Moshe forgot the halacha. Okay? What's the halacha? What is the halacha?
Which halacha, though?
What halacha did Moshe Rabbeinu for? Call a bo'el aramit kana'im pogimbo. Right? If a person is bo'el aramit, if he engages in a sexual act with an aramit in public,
then you have to.
No. What you just say? What you say? I want to say, but it's not true.
Then you have to.
It's not true. Kanaim. Translate.
Zealous.
The zealous pogimbo. What does that mean? Are permitted to kill them. The zealous are permitted to kill them.
Oh,
yeah,
this is.
What?
Oh yeah, no. Because you've got the guy who's tearing up.
We're gonna get there in a second. not for nothing that I made. Did I bring this up? Okay. Says the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Hagonev et hakisva. The Gemara talks about it. If you steal like kelim from the Beit Hamikdash, v'hamekalel bekosein, v'haboel aramit. We're just getting the last one. Kanaim pogimbo. It's a halacha. Right? If someone is boel aramit.
And that's what Moshe forgot.
Yeah. Haboel aramit. But it wasn't just that Moshe forgot it. One second. Says the Gemara. Amar Rav Chisda. It wasn't that Moshe forgot it. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't answer.
Yeah.
Haba limlach ein morin lo. If you're in the middle of this lewd sexual public act, and you all of a sudden have this spirit of zealotry, and you run to Rav Hillel Mertzbach and you say, Rav Hillel, I am enraged. I want to kill this guy. May I? He can't tell you to do it.
The answer has to be no.
No.
Yeah,
it has to be from you.
Amar Rab Yochanan. Haba limlach ein morin lo. This is halacha. If you ask the question, the Rav, the Beit Din, will not tell you to do it. V'lo od elash im pirish Zimri v'harago Pinchas neharagala. If Zimri, right before he stops engaging in this lewd act, and then Pinchas kills him anyway,
murder.
It's only in the moment, at the time, on your own initiative.
Without asking.
Beit Din would never tell you to do such a thing. What? I am consumed by this notion of what it means, halacha ve'ein morin ken. How can there be a halacha that Beit Din cannot instruct? But there is. What does it mean about this halacha? As you can understand, I'm talking about it in a more broad sense. Is this the only halacha that Beit Din doesn't tell you about? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
today,
of
Kanaut.
Is Kanaut the only?
Yeah. It's an interesting question. I have to do right there. That's why they have the internet to do an internet search. Good PhD. It seems to me today, we live in an era where there's a lot of halacha ve'ein morin ken. Just a lot. So this got me all interested. I started to look it up. This is a Mishnah. So if it's a Mishnah, it should appear in the Shulchan Aruch. Shouldn't it?
Yes.
Right? If this is the halacha of Kanaim Bogimbo, what do you know? It does. So I just want to share with you some things from the Shulchan Aruch. Right? I told you, it's going to be a, what?
It's interesting.
It's going to be a tricky one. It's going to be fun. Okay? I will not be pointed to be the chief rabbi of the army. Right? This is the Shulchan Aruch, by the way, that you and I all follow, that told me to say the brachot, that tells me how to keep Shabbat and all these wonderful things that we all love. Okay? Are you ready?
No.
Good.
Yeah. Do you need to leave, Laura?
I do. Actually, it's interesting. It's brought in the Ramah. The Beit Yosef doesn't bring it. He doesn't quote it. Probably because he thought it was not, like many halachot that don't appear in the Shulchan Aruch because they're not relevant b'yameinu. Okay? Says the Beit Yosef, Haba al ha'akum befarhesia. Person who sleeps with an akum. This is in reading. Choshen mishpat. Right? Taf, simin taf kuf hei, si'if dalet. Reading. This is not Reuven Spalter. Okay, so when the hearing comes up, you know, for my position, just read the Shulchan Aruch. Haba al akum befarhesia le'enei asara yisraelim. If someone engages in immoral sexual behavior in the eyes of, in front of at least 10 Jews, kana'im pogimbo umutarim lahargo. Okay, the zealots may strike him and kill him. Mutarim doesn't mean they have to. There's some chiyuv. V'davka b'sha'at ma'aseh, and that's only, this is the Gemara, only when he's in the act. Aval im peresh asur lahargo. If he separated, if he stopped, and you can't kill him. V'davka shehidrubo v'lo peresh. That's only if they warned him. They said, we're going to kill you. I don't know, did is there a record that Pinchas warned Zimri? I don't know. Okay. V'davka sheba hakanai lahargo me'atzmo. And it's only if the kanai, the zealot, came to kill him on his own. Aval im sha'al beitin, ein morin lo kach. Okay, but if he asks beitin, then they can't tell him what to do. It's halacha, halacha ve'ein morin kin. Right? There are more halachot of halacha ve'ein morin kin. I don't know what the whole list is. I think it's a very short list. Yeah, we'll have to check. I'm sure somebody wrote an article on it somewhere on the internet. Quite positive. So what do we do with this halacha ve'ein morin kin? Like, there's not much on this because it's not really, it's no relevanti, as we say in Hebrew.
Some people think that to be a kanai is relevanti. We have all these. Last year there was a guy who killed a girl at the gay parade.
Right.
Is he a kanai or was he mentally ill?
No, he was a little. What's the line? Wait. What's the line between kanaut and mental illness?
I know that when after the rabbi murder, we went to Bar-Ilan, where a lot of it happened. I mean, they were all students from Bar-Ilan.
Yeah.
Like this meeting at the Kollel, and someone stood up and said, "Mine Pinchas." He was Pinchas in front of all the people and all the rabbis the day after.
That guy got kicked out of the army very fast. Yeah.
So I'm saying, it's people do take it seriously. I mean, yeah.
Okay, so that got me interested. That was the Ramah in Sif Dalid. I'm going to read you Sif Hey. Okay, this is also, I just want to remind you, the same Shulchan Aruch that guided you in how to say Kriyat Shema this morning and how to make Kiddush, and that we all follow the Shulchan Aruch that guides our daily lives. Apikoros Misrael. Apikoros Misrael. Vehem Ovdei Akum. Apikoros, an apostate from the Jewish people who either worship idols or violate sins lahachis, i.e. lahachis.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Dafka.
Afilu achal nevela o lavash shatnez lahachis. Even he ate a shrimp or he put on shatnez and said, see God, I could care less about your silly rules. Harez the apikoros. He is an apikoros. He is an apostate. And those who deny the Torah and deny prophecy in Israel, mitzvah lehorgan.
I'm
just reading the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, I wasn't giving you that introduction for nothing.
But I heard you get round there by saying there's no such thing today as an apikoros.
That's so nice of you.
To be an apikoros, you have to be very learned, and most people who we would call an apikoros are not learned at all.
Mitzvah lohargan. What does that mean, not learned? How can you say that? You think back in the Rambam's time they knew anything? You're only someone who learned Shas and then...
Only
Elisha
ben
Abuya,
like only that.
Mitzvah lo'argam im yesh if you can do it, if the Jews have the ability, good. Ve'im lav, and if you can't, yisavei b'sibat ha'avaratan. You can you should cause him to be passed from the world. Ketad, how? for example, ra'a echad mehem shenafal lebe'er v'asulam bebe'er. Let's say, for example, this apikoros fell into a pit, and there's a well in the pit.
There's a ladder in the pit.
There's a ladder. The ladder in the pit. There's a well in the pit. The ladder in the pit. Okay. Kodem umisalko. So you take the ladder. V'omer hareini tarud lahodri bani mihagag v'achzivenu lecha. So you say to him, he's like, hey, bring the ladder. Oh, yeah, I just have to go and turn the kid and I'll be back. Right? And all of a sudden you forget about
him.
And you leave him in the well and let him die.
That's terrible.
That's
not in sync with Western culture.
Aval, ha'akum, she'ein beinenu beinam milchama. Right? But non-Jews, we don't have any war. V'ro'eh be'imah dakam Yisrael b'makom sh'asadot neim she'Yisrael. So, like, non-Jews and Jews that are doing, like, small sins, we don't cause them to die. But if they're in danger, we don't save them.
What?
What? What?
It's Rabbi Frati.
B'nei d'vayim what? When is this true? B'Yisrael ba'al averot v'hu omed b'risho v'shone bo tamid. A Jew that is he upholds his sinfulness, right? And he continues and repeats his sins, etc., etc. About Yisrael, Baal Averot she'eino omed b'risho tamid. But a Jew who sins, but he's not wicked. Ela osei averot lahana'at atzmo. He's just doing it. What am I going to do? Of course I know I should keep the Torah, but whatever. Kagon ochel nevelo v'te'avon. Shrimp is good. I know I'm not supposed to, but it's tasty. That's very different than, of course I eat shrimp. What's wrong with eating shrimp? Who's God to tell me what to do? Those are two very different things. Mitzvah la'atzilo, v'atzur la'amod al demo. The difference between literally and the Shulchan Aruch, tough kaf hey, siv hey, life and death. Okay, Laura.
Wait, stop.
I have to read you the Be'er HaGolah. Because all of a sudden the Be'er HaGolah. Where's the Be'er HaGolah? Rabbeinu Moshe Ravkash.
It doesn't tell me anything.
Well, look it up on the internet. Okay, that's why we have Google. Shin. Immediately he says, long essay. Be'er HaGolah usually, by the way, just to point out, is just giving you sources. Source. This is from the Rambam, this is from Shulchan Aruch, this from here, this from there. All of a sudden, Lo amru chazal de ela al akum sheyabiz manehem. This is only about akum that is in their time. Shayu ovdei kachavim umazalot. V'lo hayu ma'aminim. That's only if they literally worship idols. V'lo hayu ma'aminim b'yetziyat mitzrayim u'b'chidush ha'olam. They didn't believe in creation. They didn't believe in the Exodus. Aval elu goyim esher anachnu u'ma Yisraelim chusim b'tzel shalahem. But the Jews who we live in the shadow of their, the non-Jews who we live in the shadow of their protection. U'mufuzarim b'neihem, and we are spread out amongst them. Hey, ma'aminim b'chidush ha'olam. They believe in creation. They believe in the Exodus. And so what is immediately the Be'er HaGolah say about this thing about the Goyim? That's not that relevant to us. Okay.
Why is it not relevant to us? Because
they're not the non-Jews that we were. They're not those non-Jews. Right. Those but not our non-Jews. Now, by the way, when did the Shulchan Aruch write this? When did Rabbi Yossi Karo codify this?
In the 15th century.
Right. So he was, what? So his Muslims didn't believe in it, but, you know what I'm saying? But the Christians did believe in it?
When did the Be'er HaGolah...
Why did he do this?
When did he live?
Take out your phone and look up Rabbi Moshe Ravkash. Rabbi Moshe Ravkash, and you'll find out, I'm sure. After the Shulchan Aruch, probably 1700s in Poland somewhere. So, okay. This is a problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do we as Orthodox Jews do with this? I mean, on the one hand, we say to ourselves, wow, the criticism of the Rav Tzvai is so unfair, and he was talking in theoretical sense, but we are supposed to subscribe to the values of the Torah. You know what I'm saying? These are our values. And then we come and we read these things and we say to ourselves, but this is an anathema to the way we understand. You know what I'm saying? You know, how do we deal with reform? Thank God, nobody got up and started quoting the Shulchan Aruch.
Right.
But what if he did? What would we say then? We'd all sit in our seats and squirm and say, well, I don't know what to say. What?
What did you say?
Mami,
no, there's a better term. Halacha ve'in morinke. Like, is this really the halacha that we believe in? That we want to return to?
No.
We dream of being machzir b'tshuva. Everybody be chozer b'tshuva. What if they don't? They don't want to be chozer b'tshuva. They want to be apikores lahachis. This is the value of the Shulchan Aruch. So on the one hand, by the way, it's interesting. Like, I went to that conference last night because I felt like if you're gonna be critical of it, you have to be there, you have to experience it, you have to see. Now, they didn't say anything that didn't surprise me. But this morning I woke up and I found myself like affected by it. Because here I am, I'm like sitting in, you know, I come from a very different place. I was raised with very different values. You know, I like the culture in which I grew up finds this Shulchan Aruch to be an anathema. And so therefore, when I come here and I hear people say, we have to fight reform, we have to stand up against them, I say, like, chill out, calm down. You know what I'm saying? Like, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that, like, okay, this is not relevant. It's not applicable today. Why? Because we can't. Should we want to? I hope not, but is that my Western values? Is that my American upbringing? Is my American upbringing so, like, you know, like the people usually have problems with the war against reform are the people that grew up with it and know it. So we hear like the chief rabbi of Israel and, you know, like rabbis that I respect, I don't have to necessarily agree with all of them, but these are the leaders of our community. And hundreds of people are there and saying, this is a terrible problem, we have to stand up against them. So it makes me wonder, like, who's wrong? Like, who's closer to the value of the Shulchan Aruch? Told you it was going to be hard to hear.
No, but there are other
rabbis. There are great rabbis who weren't at that conference and who have disagreeing views on it, who think that we should just let it slide and that, and have a very different approach to it. Those rabbis who also follow the Shulchan Aruch,
yeah,
and would say that things are different now. We don't say that every line in the Shulchan Aruch is applicable now. We don't. So why can't you say that this line is not applicable now? We also don't say that all the lines in the Shulchan Aruch should be applicable in the future. We don't say that. There are parts of the Shulchan Aruch that we dismiss.
These are core values. This is a core value.
It is a core value and a reality that doesn't exist.
What is our attitude towards people who promote values, Jews? Who promote values that are totally antithetical to the values with which we believe? What?
Chabad.
Yeah, what's their answer?
Draw people in, speak to them. They don't fight against the movement, they don't fight publicly. But they make quiet inroads and they find their point of connection on an individual basis.
But they're not dealing with R.P. Carson.
They don't engage in debate.
They don't engage.
It's not their agenda to engage in that fight. But assume, by the way, assume that you were the chief rabbi of Israel, that you have power. They have power. We have power now. What do you do with power? Like, Chabad is not in a position. Their whole goal is Kiruv, and it's beautiful and it's wonderful. But they're not asking that question. It's not, this Shulchan Aruch is not relevant to them. You know what I'm saying? It's not part of their issue.
So Orthodoxy has to put down Gvulot
at hand. So maybe they're right. Maybe they're right to say, Ad Kan, we're going to fight reform. Not Lo Bebeit Sifreinu. We're not going to have this here. We don't want to have an area in the Kotel. It doesn't matter. You're right. There's no Shulchan Aruch that says this. But at least the value of the Shulchan Aruch is to say, you know, we can't abide by this. We have to stand up and speak out against it. Like, that's what it struck me at this thing. Hundreds of people were there. The vast majority, 99% of them, have never met anybody before in their lives. They've never interacted with anybody to reform. And they're not influenced by reform in any way. Like, so why are you all coming? It's such a fascinating question. Like, why do you feel so threatened by this thing that is not threatening you at all?
Yes, it's not threatening you on a personal level, but it's threatening you on, like, the idea of giving legitimacy to it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the shul you don't go to, or the chilonim don't go to, is the Orthodox shul.
Correct.
And if the shul they don't go to starts becoming the Reform shul, and then they might go to that reform.
40 years of reform has been trying to make inroads in Israel.
Yeah.
Why not?
Because people don't.
I've thought about this a lot. The reason why in Chutz La'aretz people go to reform, or you know what I'm saying, conservative is an offshoot of Orthodox. Let's do a bit of the reform for now. It's because they want to affiliate as Jews, but they don't want to affiliate necessarily religiously. It's an identity question. It's an identity question. So therefore, your affiliation, your Jewish identity, it requires you, like your Christian identity, it requires you. It's not a religious affiliation,
right?
It's a social, national affiliation.
Some of them don't have tradition.
What? They are the secular Jews in
here
America.
Here they have tradition.
What?
Here
you don't need that
there,
in order. So like, if I want to go to shul, I'm going to go to shul.
Right.
I go to shul for religion. I don't need to go to shul in order to have my national identity and affiliation.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But on the other hand,
it will never be a threat from that reason. Like, that's what they always say. The shul Israelis don't go to is the Orthodox shul.
Right.
You know?
Except when it's their
bar
mitzvah.
So it's not a threat.
Except when it's their bar mitzvah. And the Orthodox shul says they can't take pictures. I'm concerned about
so
that.
So it's interesting. Rabbi Ariel said they should do all the bar mitzvahs on Thursday afternoon.
Right.
They can come. He's right. He's probably right. They're not going to do it. You know what I'm saying?
During
the week. They should do it on Thursday afternoon, have a party. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, but it's a. This is a. I thought I was going to say one thing. I just don't know. It's a tactical question. Is the war correct because we're promoting, like, we have to say no. We as a community stand for certain values. And perhaps my distaste in this comes from I'm raised in a different value setting and I've been influenced by it.
It's very different to saying you have to go kill them.
Yeah.
Very different.
Of course. I would
yeah.
never suggest such a thing. I'm
no.
not suggesting it.
No.
Nobody is suggesting.
No, obviously you're not. But I'm saying, even
other than
you,
the Shulchan Aruch.
I think what you just said is very legitimate, but it's very far from the Shulchan Aruch.
Very far.
Very far.
So what do we do? Then the question, of course, becomes, what do you do with that power? What do you do when you see
you
biblical stories?
You're saying that it's not appropriate to add an age. It's not. And even the, who did you say?
Well, how do you deal with, wait,
who was the last guy, the Be'er what?
The Be'er HaGola.
Be'er HaGola. He also came with all kinds of quickly to protect himself.
He didn't say it about the Jews.
No,
he didn't say
I
it about
know,
the Jews. He wasn't bothered by the Jews.
Uh-huh.
We can do whatever we want with
the
Jews. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Why? And what do you do with it? Really, why is it not relevant to our day and age?
It's just
not. No, you can't say
it's
that.
Like slavery isn't.
You have to explain why not.
Because we don't go around killing people because of their beliefs.
Beit Din is supposed to.
We don't have a Beit Din.
So you don't want to have a Beit Din?
I do, but we're not there.
So you're saying it will be relevant, but just
not
now.
I'm not sure. I don't think the Beit Din will be the same way it was. No, I don't.
Really?
I agree with Laura.
I don't believe it will.
I agree
no.
with Laura.
I don't believe it will.
I think the reality is
we're not going to start doing skila and no, I don't think it's going to happen. Sorry.
I said we're just going to.
I'm also not going to be the Rabbi Rashi.
You could now. No, you could be the Rabbi Rashi. You are eligible. But those people who believe that the Torah is complete and the Torah is pure and perfect.
It is, but it's also an organic body that develops according to where we are.
Right, you know who says that?
It's a living Torah.
You know who
don't
says that?
Don't do it. Don't go
Torah.
There. That's not true.
That's not fair. It's a living Torah. It's a living
All I have to
Torah.
Do is say the word, and then
that's
I brand you, and then you'll never be that. What?
Hi, Bahem.
All right, we'll stop here.